And welcome to the Cave Thompson Live Show. And welcome to the Cave Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. This is Cave Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network.com/Cave Thompson Live. You can listen to us every Wednesday at 8 to 9 p.m. And the show is archived in case you hear some gems that you want to listen to again. My name is Eric Payne. No music tonight. We're going straight into it. I'm the son. You are a lady.
I am Kay Thompson, and I am the mother of Eric Payne. And also, as you know, we have a lot to talk about tonight, you know, because of the fact that, you know, there's still a lot of snow on the ground here. I mean, we were actually snowed in here in North Park, New Jersey, and a lot of people are still suffering because of this weather, and I think that really didn't have a little cold here. But we're going to be talking to a number of people this day who are really very, doing very exciting things. And the first caller that we're going to be talking to is going to be Capri St. Ville, and we're going to be talking about the rebuilding program that they're doing in the country of Haiti. And she'll be calling in very soon. We're also going to be talking to Wayne Gilman, our other co-host, and he is going to be joining in as he usually does. Later on in the program, we are also going to be talking to Mal Wolfolk because he has new business opportunities for businesses in the area and outside of the area, so there's a lot of things going on. Also, a lot of things going on in Washington, by the way. There is a new, Attorney General? Somebody who's been chosen for the Attorney General, you know. Her name is Loretta Lynch, and she is qualified for this monumental job. She's going to be taking over for Eric Holder. Is that correct, Eric?
That's correct. And you all might hear me eating a little bit because I'm eating my dinner, so it's live radio. Welcome to the live world. They do all kinds of things on reality TV. We're not even approaching anything close to that. But you might hear me smacking a little bit, and please forgive me. But, yeah, on two fronts, on the Loretta Lynch, this woman is sharp, state's attorney from New York. I think she is the state's attorney for the county of New York, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not exactly sure, but I was watching some of the hearing today, her confirmation hearing. And you could just tell that some of the Republicans, the ruder ones, just really, you know, wanted to give her, you know, they want to grill her a little bit. They want to act like they're nice, but then they want to grill her. And you could tell in their tone a little bit, it's a little aggressive. I'm talking about Congressman Jeff Sessions from Alabama, Republican. And he is all of that description. And watching him in particular fire questions at her was interesting. But she is such a sharp, sharp lady and unruffled and really is just really a sweet lady and just kind of disarms them all. So she'll probably be confirmed, I'm pretty sure. And also you mentioned Haiti. There are a lot of opportunities. That's been a big news story, certainly a story on the financial network. So I was watching one about some of the financial opportunities where people are seeing in Haiti that financial opportunities are available for people who want to come and do business in Haiti. There was one particular Irish billionaire who is the cell phone provider. And he's providing that. And they also have a part of Haiti, which is a little resort area. They just don't take you to the other side where the people are poor, which is what they like to do in a lot of these poorer countries. But it might also be an opportunity for a lot of African-American and people of color that are investors that have a lot of money that can help build the country of Haiti, help build its infrastructure, and be able to make money and turn a profit while you're helping this nation rebuild itself or build itself up. So those are really good stories, things to talk about.
And the person that we're going to be talking to is Capri St. Ville. And she and her husband, Willair, they have a program. It's not really a program. He is in charge of an outfit out of Washington. I'll get the name. I misplaced it. Here it is. He's a member of the Washington, D.C. Mayor's Advisory Commission on Caribbean Community Affairs. And what they are doing is this organization, or this group of people, they are rebuilding Haiti one step at a time, educationally, economically, you know, building up the beaches, building up the businesses. And also, you know, there's so much history, you know, to Haiti. And so we're going to be talking to Capri about that. And getting some of this history. I remember when I was first at LIB, I was really absolutely fascinated, you know, with the country of Haiti, because they had done so much, and they're doing so much now, and building up, and they had to go through, you know, the earthquake,
right.
And, you know, the damage that was done, you know, through this big island, but it has a whole lot of history. So we want to hear from Capri, and she should be calling in soon.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much they've done. I don't know whether you can say they've done so much in terms of positiveness for their people. I think about Papa Doc and Baby Doc DeValle. They've come a long way. Well, when we talk about it, let's be a little bit accurate. So they went through some strife initially.
Yeah.
And they were one of the first countries, I believe, to have their independence, first black nations, a long time ago, if I'm not mistaken. That's something that probably Capri will air. Could really clarify for us.
Yeah.
But they did go through some, you know, they had a class system there. They had a guy that was a dictator and a ruler. And the United States became more involved and more active in Haiti, the island of Haiti, and were able to try and push them to have some democratic elections. Some worked out better than others. I know that late Congressman Donald Payne Sr. was very instrumental in trying to help Haiti get on a better standing with the rest of the world and really develop as a nation. And so they have come a long way. They've been through some hard times, but the earthquake was a hard time as well. But a lot of people are interested in helping them. A lot of philanthropists like Sean Penn, I know that he has an organization that's over there helping them out. And as best I can tell, and the story I saw on the TV was not, he's not developing any business, any reason to make money like some of these other people that might come in, which are businessmen, which is fair. But Sean Penn is interested in the humanitarian effort. And we have to give him a big shout-out and a big props for Sean Penn for doing that.
Well, the name of this organization, Dr. Capri, and the way I say Bill, you know, are involved in rebuilding Haiti one trip at a time. And they're going to be talking about the history of Haiti. They're going to be talking about developing partnerships. They're going to be talking about the opportunities that are available. They're going to be talking about the educational system that they are trying to strengthen there. And they're going to be talking about sharing connections and ideas. So as soon as Capri calls in, we will be talking to her. Also, as soon as Wayne Gilman, who's our co-host and former news director at WIBDLS for years, we'll be hearing from him calling in. We may even have some problems with, you know, getting to people because, you know, all the snow, a lot of snow is still around. I don't know about just parts of the country, but it's out there. I mean, we had trouble driving, you know, from one place to the other in a small area where we are.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then but now Wolf Colvin, you know, he is always has his ear open in his organization about different business opportunities, you know, especially, you know, in the South American countries. So we're waiting for their call.
Well, while we're waiting, let's talk about stuff we can talk about, which might be the hot topics you wanted to discuss earlier today.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, you know, it's a news thing in the newspaper about this person, I don't know who was testing his this drone, you know? What is that thing that, you know, flies without, what is it?
A drone,
right? Mm-hmm. It comes to find it that he is member of something there at the White House, and he had been drinking, and he lost sight of his drone, the drone drove on the lawn of the White House, and so that is under investigation, and that is going to be he's a government intelligence person, and had been drinking on the job. I don't know, there's people getting a little shaky around the White House. I'd be a little bit more cautious in moving around the White House these days. I mean, things are happening there that shouldn't be happening. That you've never even heard of before. You know, people, you know, entering into an area of the White House. What's going on? But anyway, they need to straighten that out. But also, the first lady was criticized, I understand, in Saudi Arabia for not wearing a headscarf. You know, and this is what several of the first ladies, you know, in the United States did not do. Some people did. Some of the, you know, White House wives did. Some didn't. So, but it's not a requirement. But still, anything that Michelle Obama does, you know, is open to criticism. And so, therefore, that, you know, everybody understands where that's coming from. Laura Bush did not do it, and neither did Hillary Clinton, I would say. Another thing I was looking about is when I was talking about the drone situation and the White House being under two very careful, guarding. You know, how do you guard the White House, and how do you have these things happen at the White House, people going in and out, and still there's nothing being done about it? I mean, that thing's being done, but it seems to me that it's happening just a little bit too frequently. If it happens once or twice, it's too frequently.
Yeah, close.
So also, okay, so I have to get close to the mic.
Yeah, I might as well say that out loud. I'm trying to get it to get closer to the mic. My mom doesn't read the hand signals too much, so she hasn't played a lot of football, so the hand signals don't work for her. So y'all might as well hear. Get closer to the mic, Ma.
Talking about football. What is this business about deflating a football?
Hold on. I think we got the legend. You just in time for the discussion of football, brother. The one, the only, Wayne Gilman.
Are you there, Wayne? Are you there, Wayne?
Oh, it's Capri. Hey, Capri.
Hey.
This is my son Eric with me, Capri. And we just
talked
about it. So where are you calling from?
We are calling from Washington, D.C.
Okay. So you have an office down in Washington also, is that it?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Now, I don't know, we may have some difficulty tonight. I don't know if it's because of, the snow still around or whatever, but there seems to be a little delay, in our, getting through. So, but anyway, listen, I wonder if you could tell us about the organization, building Haiti or rebuilding Haiti one step at a time, right?
It's called Rebuilding Haiti One Trip at a Time.
One trip at a time, okay. So what is that exactly, and can you explain, give us all the particulars?
Well, I'll basically just start with our mission, and our mission is introducing like-minded people to the richness of Haiti's culture, history, and vibrant flair for life through tourism and sociocultural activism.
Yes.
And that is basically our mission, and when we say like-minded people, we mean people who want to, in terms of experiencing their vacation, they want to go beyond just lounging on the beach, although we do that, and actually interact and learn about the culture and history of the place that they're visiting.
So, Capri, that sounds like a fantastic program. A lot of times, Americans, they always get charged with going to places and, having a very American attitude, particularly when we're talking about Caribbean countries and countries of color, from what I've, that's my personal feeling. And we see that reflected in movies a lot of things when you have people going overseas and people taking trips. I was just talking with my mom about seeing some of these stories on channels like CNBC and some of these other financial networks that they're talking about some people have business opportunities and all the opportunities that some of these big corporations are trying to come into Haiti now and take advantage of that. What is your feeling about that in terms of the opportunities that are available to help Haiti build and build its infrastructure and become a really vibrant country?
Well, one of the things that we're seeing in Haiti, and since you have pointed that out, in Port-au-Prince, you now have the Marriott that has built a large resort hotel there. But for us, what we're looking to do is put the money directly into the hands of local businesses. So the beach resort we stay at, and when we say beach resort, I mean beach resort in that we are literally on the beach. It's not one of those things when it tells you it's close to or whatever, you are right on the beach. You wake up and go to sleep to the sound of the waves.
Oh,
and it's
goodness.
Owned by a Haitian family. This resort is owned by a Haitian family. And, in fact, what's very interesting and one of the reasons why we hope to that they will continue and, thrive, and that's one of the reasons why we support them, is they are right around the cove from Labadee, which is where Royal Caribbean docks. It's a wonderful contrast in that it's on the sort of same stretch of beach, but it's around the cove. You can't see their beach, but when we drive over there, you see the impact that Royal Caribbean has had. And, in fact, Carnival Cruise Line is looking to come in at an island not far from where, off the coast island, not far from where we stay. But where we are staying, it is a resort owned by a local family, beautiful resort, and it's also on the north side of the island, which is Port-au-Prince is at the south side of the island. We stay at the north side of the island, and clearly someone is planning something because American Airlines now has a flight, which was inaugurated by Hillary Clinton, that now comes directly to Cap Haitien, which is where we stay.
I see. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that family because, in obviously, that being the Haiti being what it is, and as you mentioned, seeing all these opportunities, something is going on, and a lot of large corporations and the rest of the world are seeing the opportunities available to Haiti, and I guess now opportunities will be becoming available in Cuba as well. But
oh yeah,
what my concern is, and you kind of addressed that, and what my hope is that more Haitians can have businesses and take part in this boom, if you will, in people discovering Haiti. We want the people of Haiti to benefit from that. We black people mostly, and I guess I'm sure there are some others, but we certainly want our people and the indigenous people that are Haitians to benefit from all of the business opportunities that are coming there, even as it regards to African-American people who have the finance and the capital to go into business. You know, it's a great way to form a partnership with our brothers and sisters in Haiti. I just wanted to wonder your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you say that because, and I almost feel like I would like this individual to come on your show at some time. We were very honored to have the owners of Ben's Chili Bowl that joined us in December for our journey to Haiti. And one of the things that we had thought about in terms of having them come, and it's something that's in continued discussion, I don't want to talk about it too much, but was they have their restaurant, Ben's Next Door. And to look to see if Ben's Next Door perhaps could serve Haitian coffee. Because people don't realize that Haiti is very much so known for its coffee. It has what's interesting about it is that it's a 600-year unaltered sort of a line that traces its roots back to the original seeds from Africa in terms of the Ethiopian coffee that the Europeans brought over. And it has not been altered, not like other people that have blended it with this, that, and that. It is the sort of the original plant. And they are known for the coffee. They were, in fact, pre-revolution, they were the largest producers of coffee, indigo, sugar, rum. They were the richest island in the world.
Wow.
But that's something that people don't think about Haitian coffee. But there was, in fact, an article in Esquire about Haitian coffee. But that what you're saying, Eric, is exactly what we're looking at, is that how can we sort of make that connection, perhaps to some of the people that we know that are looking to support Haitian businesses and sort of find a way to sell or connect with one side connecting with the other.
Well, Capri, people listening to this program, there might be some people listening saying, wow, you know, we'd like to make a connection. How would you suggest that they go about this? I mean, can they contact you? Can they follow up in some kind of way? Because we can certainly do follow-up stories for you here on Kay Thompson Live on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you know, first off, we have our Rebuilding Haiti One Trip at a Time Facebook page. We are working on the web page, but anyone that uses Facebook can go to Rebuilding Haiti One Trip at a Time on Facebook. The other one is we have our email address, which again is rebuildinghaitillc@gmail.com. Again, that's Rebuilding Haiti LLC, altogether, at gmail.com.
I see.
And just to point out, we had 20 people, our largest group ever. We had 20 people who joined us in December 2014. We had a wonderful, diverse group in terms of not only just ethnically, and but also age. We had young people who, we had a young person who was 9 and to someone who was 80.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about the cultural aspect of Haiti? You know, what about the music? What about the dancing? What about the excitement? You know, on the beach, off the beach.
That's all the things. We stay at the beach resort, but we also stay one night in town. However, the young people, and I guess not so young people, that wanted to go out, and there's a local business that they have sort of a great representation in terms of live music, Haitian music, Lakai, that's right on right at the waterfront, and it's a popular place in town, and people go there, and we all went there to not only to eat, you know, lunch, but also in the evening, that was a popular hangout spot. We also at the hotel had a local folkloric group join us and did a whole sort of drumming, dance, music to show us the traditional music and dance of Haiti. And then, of course, you have a chance to go out and hear the popular music.
Yeah. What's the most, this is because of this, you know, my throat is scratchy. But what's the popular dance now in Haiti? Do you know? Young people are going. So what is it?
In Haiti, the music is always compas, and so compas is the name of the basic popular dance in Haiti, music in Haiti, and the dance is a typical kind of it's a cross between, I would say, salsa and merengue. And because, again, you dance to the beat of the rhythm, which is compas, it's closest to Zouk, which is also similar to the music you listen in Dominica and Guadeloupe. And so that's what I would say.
Yeah.
But the other part I wanted to add, Eric, is talk about culture. We also, at the resort where we stay, they have the second largest Taino artifacts in the world. They have 3,000 pieces of And these they're actually right now in the process of building a museum, and they are connecting with the Smithsonian to actually make that a reality. And so when people travel with us, like the people who were there with us in December, you have a special tour of these and kind of explanation of these 3,000 artifacts, how they were collected, what they represent, the culture, the spirituality of the Taino folks who first were in the island before colonization.
Yeah, they're the first inhabitants of the island. And, in fact, there's a spot that we go to that's about an hour away from the hotel itself, that where it's unbelievable, where you can actually see the hieroglyphics from these people that's done on rocks, different spots by the riverbed. It's absolutely amazing.
It's actually a spiritual experience. You go there, you actually can feel the vibe, the energy that was there for thousands of years.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to get to that because the history, you know, I remember reading about the history of Haiti, you know, but forgotten so much about it since my early days at WLIB. But I remember, the ceremony, the dancing also. Wasn't Haiti a key island for people coming directly from Africa?
Yes, it's one of the first ports of the slave trade.
Yes.
And it's interesting also that when you hear the history, our guide and the person that excites our guests the most is a former Minister of Culture and History for the North Region, which is where we are, and he's our official guide. So whenever we travel to Haiti with our guests, he's with us the entire time. And he'll tell you as far as the arrival of the first wave of enslaved folks from the Guinean region, the Sudanese region, the Congolese region. Because, for example, you know Toussaint Louverture was from Congo, from Benin.
And so he tells you the history of the of those slave ships arriving in Haiti, and also the different wave of colonizers that came to the island. It kind of helps you to understand why, when people say, why is Haiti where it is today, you have to go back to the very basic history of Haiti, how the island came to be. And so those are the kind of discoveries, and those are the kind of experience that people have when they travel with us. We don't simply do the pleasure. We actually get into the history from the very onset of the island as we know it today to the current days.
Yeah.
So how has the response, I mean, it sounds like the response has been fantastic that you've been getting. I mean, has it been as overwhelming? I mean, I'm excited about it. As I said, I was paying attention to a couple of stories on the financial networks about a lot of these corporations and what's happening in Haiti now. And has the response been as, what I mean to say, is the response an excitable response? You know, a lot of people, if you hear about these opportunities, and as you guys talk further and educate me further about that, I get more excited, certainly in the respect that the people of Haiti have, that this could potentially help turn the nation around and have the average Haitian person being able to have a decent a life just like anybody else. Are you getting a lot of good feedback? A lot of people excited about going on these trips?
Eric, yeah, I would say one of the things that I want you to do, I would completely talk about this because I was born in Haiti, so there's a bias in me in talking about this. But rebuilding Haiti one trip at a time would not happen without Capri experiencing Haiti for the first time, and why she actually is the originator of this idea. So I'll let her address that for you, Eric. She'll do it probably more authentically.
Well, I'll say that it's yes and no in terms of what you're saying, Eric, in that it is our hope and dream, which is why we were excited to have the 20 people. It took us a long time to get to the group that we have now. We would have 5-6 people to get to the 20, and the particular people we were looking to get to are people who are business people in the United States, people who are educators at colleges that could perhaps really serve as a key link. But it's still difficult for people to wrap their heads around thinking of the possibility of business. And I'm so glad you said that, because one of the things that I'm seeing, or we see on the island, is that other people are not hesitating.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that is big people in terms of the Marriott's and the Carnival Cruise and Royal Caribbean is expanding, to the little person who has, we see so many Europeans that are in Cap Haitian that are buying up property. Because, like, for instance, Cap Haitian, that someone else will look at and say, which is reminiscent, it has the look of New Orleans, because we have to remember it was a French colony. And however, it has been, you know, as a result of poverty, some of the houses have been compromised in terms of people build on them and do this. 2 years ago, I think we had looked at some homes in the Cap Haitian area, because I just think they're beautiful, and if we could build on that. And some of them were selling anywhere between 75, 80, maybe 90,000. This past December, there were three houses that sold for 250.
Wow.
So you have to ask yourself, who is buying them? And what is going to happen is perhaps, gentrification and Cap Haitian.
And here's the case, Eric. Our second time to Haiti, the owner of the property where we stayed took us around to see land, because we were interested in buying land and then build our home. And the three lots that we saw were owned by Europeans. So as a Haitian native, again, New York, a Haitian native, I would end up buying land in Haiti from a European.
Yeah, that's a travesty.
So it's either we can, like for us, and just to get back to rebuilding Haiti, we will always look to support local businesses. Young people and some of the people that were there using, going to a local beauty shop, going to local artisans, local restaurants, using local. But we do need to get people, for us African-Americans here, to begin looking at Haiti as a viable place of business opportunity.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
That's
and not as some poor place that, ooh, I feel so sad. That's the last thing we want.
And also people do not think of Haiti as a place where I can go for a vacation, a place where I can go and enjoy history, enjoy culture. And you've seen some of the pictures. These are real. The beach is immaculate. And it's a place where you can go actually and relax and also enjoy the culture and history.
This is a little plug. We got a chance to go to this spot called Amiga Island. It's a small island off the coast. And it's like someone, the professor from Queens College, she did on her Facebook page, how is it that no one knows about this? And on one hand, you want to keep it quiet, and yet at the same time, you want people to know about this. Like, there's a spot we went to after going to Amiga Island that's called Belly Beach, and it's owned by a young Haitian entrepreneur, young guy that purchased this and started this up and is struggling. And it's great that it's a restaurant. You bring the boat right in, and you're there. They're waiting for you with drinks and food, and it's great to know that you're supporting a local business.
Let me ask you something. I'm different in Emelaire. What is the flight time, you know, say from New Jersey, say from Newark Airport or from, New York to Haiti about?
Well, American Airlines, the flight that goes directly to Cap Haitien starts that originates in Miami. So and the flight from Miami to Cap Haitien is about an hour and a half. Hour and a half. So if you just can think in terms of for us, the time it took to get from D.C. to Miami, I think it was like a 3 hour, maybe not even 3 hours because they didn't feed us. And then an hour and a half from Miami to Cap Haitien.
And then 20 minutes later, you're on the beach.
Yeah.
We left D.C. at 6 in the morning, and by 1:30, we were on the beach.
Oh, wow. But listen, if you were to be able to, say, talk to one of the our politicians in helping Haiti, what would you ask of them to do?
What would I ask? I would say...
Well, what would you want them to know? Let's put it that way.
What I would want them to know is that, I guess on one hand, to look to support, I think... My whole thing is, how can I help Haiti help itself?
Exactly.
How can I help Haiti? And the only way I know to do that, the worst thing that happens is Haiti cannot be helped by us bringing things in and bringing coffee and bringing rice in, bringing this in, because they used to also be a large producer of rice. So I would say, Haiti, how can we help to build Haiti economically? And for me, what we can think of and that what we know we can do is by building if Haiti's infrastructure could be built and its roads, ports can be built so that they can export.
And however, as you build roads, as you build airports, the people doing the building should be Haitians. You have to train Haitians to build the roads themselves. You have to train Haiti to build the hotels themselves. You have to build Haiti by having people actually being the workers doing the work, so they benefit from the construction. So Haiti has to help itself.
Yeah.
So provide the means, but allow Haiti to help itself. So it's almost like, don't give a man a fish, help him, teach him how to fish, and take it from there.
Yeah. And the one last, if not anything else, I have to just push my way in and add, is that there's also this illusion of Haiti being some dangerous place, which is not true, because Haiti actually has the lowest crime rate out of any of the islands, and that is a fact, in that they are being asked, that the Dominican Republic is coming in and asking if they can support them, and the Dominican Republic's crime rate is like 4 or 5 times or 10 times, next time I guess I have to have my facts exactly together, but it is much, much higher, perhaps anywhere between 5 to 10 times higher, and they in fact have a very small police department, and there are not these incidents of crime and things that people have this illusion that they'll go there and God knows what will happen.
And that is the fear that is created in the mind of people about Haiti. And so, for example, when our guests travel with us and travel to Cap and go to the resort and go from place to place, they are amazed by what they experience because that's not what they hear and that's not what the news makes them feel about Haiti.
Well, I'll tell you, we don't want too many people to know about it. What I'm thinking about, where my mind is going. So I'm going to have to talk to y'all. The next time I'm in D.C., we're going to sit down and talk talk about some things, because what we want to do is, and my feeling is, and I'm sure you guys as well as most people that are of color from the motherland, we want our people to make the money. We want our people to be able to benefit from the resources in their countries. You know, I'm reminded, and I think about one of the last times I was with my uncle, and he was at a fundraiser in California, and he wanted me to come by, and I went by and sat with him, and it was a household where the woman having a fundraiser for him, she was a Jewish woman by religion, by marriage, and she was speaking on behalf, wanted to talk to him on behalf of Israel, but she was an Asian woman who married a Israeli real estate investor, and it just so happened that the other thing that her and her family were doing, they were in the Democratic Republic of Congo developing that infrastructure and trying to be there and get the contracts to develop the infrastructure in that country. And as you know, the Chinese were developing a lot of parts of Africa, and what they do is bring in their own workers in their own little camps, and a lot of the Africans don't get a lot of the work and make the money. So what we want to do, as I'm sure you guys are planning with what you're doing with Haiti, is that make sure that our people make the money and that our communities are developed. And, you know, you're right how they present these images. So that someone presents these images. I'm not going to say they, but we all know who they are. Somebody presents these images so that to keep us out. And then they go in and they scoop and they get land dirt cheap and they get these opportunities. And next thing you know, as you said, Willaire, you're going home to buy land from Europeans. So I'm certainly on board with you guys to try and make sure that we let as many people of color know of these opportunities to help our brothers and sisters in Haiti to have a really good life and to help them get what they deserve and not allow the beautiful island of Haiti to be, lack of a better word. I don't want to say, abused, but you know what I'm saying. We want Haiti to flourish, and we want the people of Haiti to flourish.
And you know, Eric, just to tag on to that, it is also possible what I want, and I think for Willaire and I, what we would like to see is that people have to recognize that there are possibilities and opportunities. I mean, one of the things we thought about is that with, like it or not, with the proliferation of hotels in Port-au-Prince, in Jacmel, in certain areas, it probably would be very beneficial for someone to open up a school of teaching hospitality training.
Hospitality,
you know,
right.
It might be beneficial. You know, I'm looking at some of the possibilities and things that people could do. And that, again, trading, and that it's sad to see that there's this individual that has this honey farm and is selling the honey of Haiti, and the person is not of Haitian descent, and they're not of African descent. And these are like other people are coming in, and it does take some time to get to know, and we have been there long enough that we now can connect people with people who could help you to make that next move if you were interested in certain business ventures.
And Eric, that's part of the economic development, because people want to see for themselves. So as people travel with us and they see the island for themselves, there's a new reality. And there's a real new reality. It hits them. People will be there with us. They'll say, oh, my God, I do not want to go back. And I want to do something. I want to commit. I want to support education. I want to support economic development, which is why we are investing in the 2 trips per year. This year we're going to go in June. We're going also in December, because we want people to come with us and see for themselves. Once they come, and they see the reality of what the island has to offer, not what they have to give to the island, what the island can give them, then they can come back and make some commitment on how they want to get involved.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, you said, how often do you take these trips? I mean, now you said you just had a big group of 20, so I imagine that is it just now beginning to pick up for you in doing these trips?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, because for December, I think we'll easily, even beyond easily, have 20 people, because we already have almost like 15 people for December. For June, we're looking at about 10, 12 people, because this time we're also bringing a yogi from a woman from D.C. who is going to be very beneficial to us, because we see this as a time for physical and spiritual rejuvenation, so all of us can prepare for the change that needs to occur for 2015 and continuing on for 2016. So the yogi is helping us to also sort of bring that element that we've been looking for. But we are looking at June, and we are looking at December.
And Eric, I've been offering people, like when we travel, and we are the convener, we also are the translators culturally and linguistically. But in the morning, I'll get up, and I'll have people, invite people to wake up with me and do yoga right on the beach. But I'm not certified. I'm a yogi, but I'm not certified. But this time, we have a certified yogi who's coming with us, and we'll be offering yoga in the morning and in the evening. So we're going to do that for June and December this year. So although we are limiting the June to about 15 people, we're hoping that you will get to 15. But in December, we already know we have 15, 20 people almost guaranteed.
And we don't ever want it. This time we had 20 people, and I think 20 is about what we would want to be. What we would prefer is if this really starts going where, oh, we need to do more, than we might have to look at 3 trips a year. But 20 people keeps it intimate enough, small enough, so that we're all able to really connect and not feel where it becomes impersonal, where you don't even know this other, you know.
And what's nice, every one of the people who are with us feel connected not only to us, to one another, and to AD, the guy. And he's so personable, so engaging, that part of the experience, because you get to sit with him, he had dinner with us, and so you get to really know the island, not just from the point of your perspective of a large group taking this generic tour. It's a very specific conversation that we have.
Yeah, you know, as you guys are speaking, I'm so clued into exactly what you're saying and see so many of the opportunities. Just what you talk about in that you guys take people around and let them know the culture and the smallness of the group. Because when people have that special feeling about something, that's when you get them emotionally attached. That's when they want to come back and either put their energy in just as a kind of a humanitarian effort, or that's when they want to come in and see the opportunities for business. That's when they feel that camaraderie, when they feel that. And the way you guys are doing it is exactly perfect, because it were I coming into this, I just am approaching this from a stranger, from a person who is open to business opportunities like that, and I know individuals that are, that I would want to be around and take this trip with people who are knowledgeable about their culture, knowledgeable about the opportunities, and can help me understand everything, because, you know, it's not just a business trip. It's a trip where you're introducing them to this wonderful island and what it has to offer and the potential of this. And when people see that, the total picture of that, I think the wise ones will want to come back and understand that this is really a fantastic opportunity. Certainly when they see a lot of the Europeans that are there and just the development that's going on already, they feel the smart person, I believe, would be one that realizes that they have an opportunity to get in on the ground floor of something very special. And certainly, you know, we'll be talking a little bit more, a lot more after the show. You know, I'll be in contact with you guys to help to see how I can be a part of and help to get this out. Because, you know, as I said, and I know it's as well for you guys as well, knowing you guys personally, it is our mission to make sure that our people benefit from our resources. Yeah. It's long overdue. And we must do that, and so we all put our heads together and make opportunities available to individuals that we know that are looking for those opportunities. I think that this, you know, will grow. It's already growing, but I think that it can grow, you know, even more. And so I'm looking at it as an opportunity now just to be involved with you guys, spread the word about this. It's the opportunity. So I'm really excited about this. And just the fact that I happened to, within the last couple of weeks, been noticing these shows on these financial networks, like I was saying earlier mm-hmm. about the guy providing a cell phone service and a couple of the other people there. Digicel, the Irish billionaire who said they had no mm-hmm. game plan. They just rode around the island and saw that people needed cell phones.
And I think one third of his business for Digicel comes from Haiti.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he's all over the world, right? I mean, he has Europe mm-hmm. and things like that. But one third of this man's business comes from Haiti. That tells you that this is a burgeoning market, a flourishing market. This market has a great deal of potential. So you guys got me excited about this, and I might be one of the people on one of them trips there real soon.
Oh, yes, you should be. And again, Rebuilding Haiti, one trip at a time, LLC@gmail.com.
Give a number for people to call for information.
Or the
Facebook. Okay, you want people for life also.
We have a Facebook page, Rebuilding Haiti, one trip at a time. If they go to Facebook, and we have a Gmail account, we are in the process of doing a web page. But the Gmail is Rebuilding Haiti, LLC@gmail.com. And please like us on our Rebuilding Haiti, one trip at a time page. And it has fantastic pictures from the 2014 and 2013 trip. And we didn't get a chance to mention, but they can see it there, is the school that we support in Cap Haitien.
Thank you both. We'll do it again.
Thank you. Okay.
Capri and Willer, it was a joy to talk to you guys again.
Thanks,
Eric. Thank you so much. I think I missed you on the boat ride this year.
Oh, yes, we'll be there next year. We missed it.
Yeah.
This year coming up, but we'll be talking further. Hopefully, I'll be on that trip in June to Haiti.
Okay.
We would love that.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, you guys. Take care.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
Bye-bye. A lot of information. You know, I've been trying to really get to them, you know, to put all this information, you know, out there because they are working so very hard. And Haiti is an important, you know, island.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you know, early on, you know, my career in broadcasting, you know, the Haitian community was absolutely fantastic. I remember when they were blamed for AIDS, you know, and there was
ridiculous,
it was so cool. And then, you know, the Haitian community got very angry. So what they did was they demonstrated and they closed down Brooklyn Bridge. I thought it was really very amusing because of the fact that the Haitian community is a powerful community. And I don't think the people in New York really realize that. So here they have blamed Haiti for this. It was absolutely incredible at the time. So, you know, they're really quite a good community, really.
You know, it's my hope that what I've noticed that happens with African Americans, I think that some of us have gotten tired of always fighting, always have to fight for our rights. And some of us are also spoiled in learning the system. You have people that are unfortunately on public assistance for generations and kind of have been lulled into a false sense of kind of just relying on support. And also just the bad habits that some of our young people have and things like that. And we don't realize, even as bad and as rough as we have it in America, that our brothers and sisters all over the world, Haiti, I was just talking earlier about with my father about Nigeria, Nairobi. We were talking about some slums over there. That black people coming from some of these very poor parts of the world come to America and see all the opportunities that are available. And even though you have to work hard, they're willing to work very hard and do what they have to do to rise above it, as are a lot of immigrants that come to the United States from very poor places. And some Americans, some of us African Americans, and I'm speaking of my people because we don't have the luxury of being able to sit back and watch and talk about, well, look how many jobs they have, they work so hard, this person is there. Not all of us,
Some of us do. We fall into that. You know, and there's a myriad of reasons why that happens. But I'm hoping that we can get inspired by some of our brothers and sisters from other parts of the world. And some of that hard work and that ethics, like, it doesn't make a difference where you start, just work hard, you can pull yourself up. Some of that mentality can rub off on African Americans, that some of our brothers and sisters from all over the world. Now, once again, I'm not saying all, and I understand there are certain different opportunities that are available to people that come from other countries, but certainly all people of African descent, we perhaps need to kind of inspire each other, and maybe it's a jolt of energy from our brothers and sisters from other parts of the country, other parts of the world, excuse me, that I'm hoping that can really help us get through there. And we're going to move on to the next segment. We don't have a lot of time, but I believe this is Mr. Mal Wolfo. Is that you, Mr. Mal?
Mal, are you there?
Hold on. I got you.
Yeah.
How about there? Mal. Mr. Mal.
Yes, sir. Yes.
There you are.
Yes, Mal. Have you been holding on for a long period of time?
Hi, no, a while, and then, you know, I didn't know whether I was getting through, so I'd made another call from another phone because the first one wasn't getting through, so.
Yeah, I figured that. Yeah. So, but anyway, listen, we have a little time, so I wanted to, what's the latest business opportunity? What are you doing
now? Mal Wolfo, intro, Mal Wolfo. Just wanted to give you your full name there in case some people out there didn't know who you were. Legendary club
impresario. Oh my goodness.
And business man. And what's the name of your company now?
Well, today, of the many hats I wear, I'm representing TMIUM.com.
TMIUM.com?
Yes. And TMIUM.com is a full service business resource company that's made up of a cooperative of several businesses, from incorporating businesses, lawyers, accountants, website design, advertising, marketing, loans, startup money, investment money, and accounts payable financing.
Yeah.
So,
and you do?
And
exactly what kind of services do you offer, or am I missing something here?
All the services I just mentioned, from creation through completion, if you will. So if somebody's thinking of starting a company and they want to know what the aspects are, we can provide that consultative service. If they want to get incorporated and they're not sure whether they should be a subchapter S or an LLC or anything, we can help them with that and get them incorporated, whether it's a profit or not-for-profit company. If they don't have a CPA firm to help them put together their financial plan for their business proposal to get a loan, we have accountants on board. We have attorneys on board who, for small businesses, will discount their traditional fees if it's a small business. And then we have a number of companies that provide financing, from first stage financing, because they work with the Small Business Administration to help startup businesses, you know, fill out the applications properly and make sure that they're done, all the way to accounts payable financing for construction companies, for instance, who often need account financing, and they will fund from $5,000 or $7,000 all the way up to $1 million.
And with the
even bigger
And with the information that they need to get to the job done, right? All things that you have to go through to, you know, get this information to the businesses, that's what you offer. Am I right?
Right. And they'll even work with businesses to help put their business plans and their financial requests together.
Yeah. How can they get in touch with you?
Well, they can call me directly at 732-685-4380.
Yeah.
732-685-4380. Or if they go to the site, TMIUM.com, I will be listed there along with the other participants. and they can call us at the office.
You know, I'm sorry that we're getting to you so late, but, you know, there has been some difficulty, and I think it's probably due because of the storm, because I know that Wayne is probably, you know, holding on also, not able to get through, so I think that we are really having some difficulty because of the storm. Other than that, that's the only way I can see that, because you called earlier, and I know that. And because
as a matter of fact, there's a, because on I called first on another phone, and that phone still has you in a call.
You're still listening on the same number. But that's okay. You're on now anyway.
We'll straighten that out. We'll straighten that out. But I'm glad to hear that finally get to you.
Well, it's a great opportunity. All the companies in the cooperative, and there are about 20 of them, have some dedicated interest in helping minority and women-owned corporations. They're not being generic, and that's why they're willing to reduce and in some cases waive their fees to help folks get started. And it's a unique opportunity. There aren't a lot of companies to do that, or banks.
So give us the number again where people can get in touch with you now.
They can reach me at 732-685-4380. 732-685-4380.
Yeah, right. And I know that, you know, we've talked a lot of times before over the years, and you always have, you know, some good projects and some good contacts. So that's your solid contact. So I want to let people know about that. And, you know, I'm sorry that, you know, this difficulty here, but, you know, we're going to be having you on again to, you know, go further into this and, you know, let people know exactly what your company does, because you've been doing a lot for the community and you've been around a long time and very successful. So forgive us for, you know, or forgive the snow, forgive somebody.
Nobody to forgive you. No, you and Eric are doing a fabulous job and providing a much needed service and a much needed informational and educational resource. So, you know, it's the rest of us trying to keep up with your initiatives and everything you try to do to help the community. So I'm happy to be a part of that, and call me anytime I can be supportive.
We will do.
Val, we really want to, as we sign off, though, we really want you to come maybe next week and call in, and we can talk in length about all the opportunities, because I know that you and I have discussed this before, and we really want to get it out to people, you know, and help you let people know, because there's some fantastic opportunities that we've discussed, and unfortunately, we're not able to give it the time we want, so we want you know, to call in next week, and we could talk about it, really give us some time.
Okay.
I'd love to. Let's talk tomorrow or the next day, and at your convenience, I'll make myself available.
Okay. Thanks, Mal. Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks. Have a good night.
You too. We just have a few
good night, everybody.
Good night.
Take care.
We just have a few more seconds before we have to sign off, and we have to apologize to Wayne. We got a line also. But Wayne, forgive us because, you know, there's some difficulty, and I'm quite sure it was due to the weather. So we enjoyed this. Hopefully people will be tuning in to Cape Town to Live every Wednesday, 8 to 9. And we're trying to give you more information about things that are available to the community in education and business and a number of other things. And we want to make sure that you also, you know, support the NAACP. They are still in existence and they're doing a wonderful job, you know. People like Sally Carroll, who is the head of the NAACP in the Newark area, and the state head of the NAACP here in New Jersey. So, you know,
she's one of the heads. There you go.
She was the state president.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for calling in on the K-Talk on the Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/K-Talk Live. You can listen to this show 8 to 9 p.m. every Wednesday, and we're also archived, so you can listen to our show at any time you want. Thanks for listening. I'm the son, Eric Payne. You are a lady.
I am the mother of Eric Payne. Join us again, everyone.
Thank you. No music? A little bit of music. Don't chicka, 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 don't chicka,